Happy, happy talk, happy talk. Talk about things you like. Do, do. Got to have a dream.
If you don't have a dream,
then have you gonna have a dream?
Hello! Nice to see what we did there. And welcome to episode 23 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. My name is Matt.
And my name is Darren.
And this week we're looking at Die Hard.
If you hadn't guessed. Yes. We're going back to 1988 again.
Again. We spent a lot of time in 1988.
We have. But this time we're going to do a Christmas film.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, it's up for debate, I suppose, whether it is a Christmas film.
Well, all right, we'll get into that. Yeah, we will get into that. I'm so excited.
Me too.
So with that in mind, how about I'm going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel, but how about we find some facts about 1988?
Straight into facts, let's do it.
I'm scraping the barrel. So some facts about 1988. I've got some big films from that year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Rain Man.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, cracking film. Well, it was.
Yeah.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes.
Big.
Never heard of it.
And Coming to America as well.
Never heard of it.
Oh, so soon for the next one. Okay, the advertising slogan, Just Do It, was coined in 1988.
Was it really?
And what company is that for?
Adidas.
But no, clearly...
Durex,
Just Do It. But clearly it's still a good slogan because 1988, we still know it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they still use it now? They've still got the tick, haven't they?
They've still got the tick. I don't know. Mm. I don't know. Nike or Nike?
Nike. I don't know.
In 1988, this is sort of going into your territory. Debbie what? Gibson?
Yeah.
She was the youngest artist to write, produce and perform a number one single on the Billboard Top 100 with her song Foolish Beat.
Okay.
There we are.
I remember Debbie Gibson.
Do you?
Well, yeah, you were either in the Debbie Gibson camp or you were in the Tiffany camp.
Oh.
Really?
I mean, I was 10, so I was probably in the He-Man camp.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, that's another story.
that's a new podcast. Here we go. Some popular books of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Matilda by Roald Dahl. Yes.
Okay, I didn't realise it was 88.
88. Silence of the Lambs by Thomas Harris.
Ooh, scary book.
And also A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
Cool.
They were all 80s, and I never really pinpointed when a book came out before.
No, I think I always assumed that Brief History of Time was before that.
Mm.
But hey, I've never read it.
Well, it's all relative.
Hey, don't get it.
How much was a pint of milk in 1988, Darren?
Oh, God, I don't know. I just drank it. 24p.
Close.
Oh, really?
26 pence.
Oh.
Rising to 27 by the end of the year.
Oh, inflation.
I know, right?
Fucking Thatcher, bitch.
Can you guess what one of the most popular cars in the UK was in 1988?
Ford Sierra.
Very close.
Oh, Ford Escort.
Yep, that's it, yeah. One of the most popular cars in 1988 in the UK was the Ford Escort.
Nice.
And those are some of my slightly scraping the barrel facts for 1988.
Hey, they're still facts. Nice. Well, should we have a look at some charts?
Let's definitely look at some charts.
We've definitely got a formula going on, haven't we? Die Hard was released on a very limited run on the 15th of July in the USA and went on general release in the USA on the 20th of July 1988. And so this week, we're looking at the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 17th of July 1988. At number 10, falling 3 places from last week's number 7, it's Breakfast in Bed, UB40 with Chrissie Hynde. At number 9, rising 9 places from last week's 18, it's Debbie Gibson and Foolish Beat. At number 8, climbing 1 place from last week's number 9, it's the Mac Band featuring the McCampbell Brothers' Roses Are Red. At number 7, falling 2 places from last week's number 5, it's Fast Car and Tracy Chapman. At number 6, falling 3 places from last week's number 3, it's the Twist Yo Twist, the Fat Boys with Chubby Checker. And at number 5, it's a massive rise of 10 places from last week's 15, it's Transvision Vamp and I Want Your Love. Also climbing 10 places to number 4 this week, it's Michael Jackson and Dirty Diana. Into the top 3, up 3 from last week's 6, it's Everything But the Girl and I Don't Want to Talk About It. It's a non-mover at number 2 for Salt-N-Pepa, Push It / Tramp. And it's another non-mover at number one. It's Glenn Medeiros, and Nothing's Gonna Change My Love For You. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 17th of July, 1988.
Yeah, that does feel familiar.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we must have done a film that was very close to that release date.
You must have.
Yeah.
If you remember which that was, then please let us know by emailing us at podcast@aceadventure.com.
Nice. Get that in there. Nice. Just outside the top 10 again, we've got Bros and I Owe You Nothing.
Right.
Dreadful song from a dreadful band.
Oh, you not a band,
just a couple of prats.
Nothing at all.
Yeah, dreadful. Def Leppard, Love Bites, amazing. Monkey, George Michael. You Came from Kim Wilde. I knew you were going to laugh.
I did, last time that was mentioned, yeah.
In the Air Tonight, Phil Collins.
You Came in the Air Tonight.
Nice. Never Tear Us Apart, NXS. What a song that is. Voyage. Anyway, yeah, so there we go. So that was that chart. That's not a bad one at all. I know
it's
we say
bad.
Every week, but you know, the 80s were great. The music then was great, and that was a good chart.
So while you were doing the chart, I Googled when Die Hard was released in the UK.
It was February the following
year.
Yeah.
They're missing a trick.
I know. Release it for Christmas.
July in America. Then the next February over here, what the hell is going on?
I don't know, mate. I don't know. Crazy.
We do have pizza on the way, so if we disappear and don't come back, this is the entire podcast.
Pizza and beer.
I suppose initial thoughts.
I've always loved the film, and that hasn't changed.
No, same here.
Yeah.
This is quite an easy one for us. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about it, but it's something we do watch every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just such a good film. I wouldn't say it's multi-layered because it is what it is. It's a good, fun action movie. It's a likeable everyday guy. What is not to like about this film? It's well acted. It's well put together. It's a little bit over the top in a good way. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I can't argue with that. Mm. This is probably the most on the same page we've been since Big.
Yeah. Well, should we just cut right to the end and do the scores?
Yeah, let's do the scores. I don't know, because I've got a doozy of a quiz for you tonight.
Oh, no. I see he's going to fight back now. He's going to fight. Well, let's just go deeper into Die Hard, shall we?
Okay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Okay then, regular listeners to the podcast will know, and if you're not a regular listener, where the hell have you been? Check out the previous episodes, they are available now from all your usual download sites. But yes, anyway, at this point in the podcast, Matt has to sum up the story of the film, i.e. the synopsis, and he gets as many seconds as the film has minutes. And this film is so fucking long, this is pointless this week. But anyway, Matthew, how long was the film?
2 hours and 12 minutes.
Jesus, 2 hours and 12 minutes. Therefore, you have 2 minutes and 12 seconds... I don't even know if I should bother timing it, but I will. To give us the synopsis. Are you ready?
John McClane arrived. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, then. Let's have the jingle. And if you're ready, go.
John McClane arrives in LA to see his wife and kids for Christmas. He's taken to Nakatomi Towers by a charismatic limo driver, Argyle. There he attends the Christmas party on the 30th floor, where he catches up with his wife, who incidentally has taken her maiden name. He also meets Ellis the coked-up sleaze and her boss, Takagi. And after taking off his shoes to get over plane travel, the party is interrupted by terrorists. He manages to get out of the office and up the stairs to another floor before the terrorists get everyone from the office, including two guests having sexy time. Yes, I had to get that in. The leader, Hans, takes Takagi and wants the code to the vault, which Takagi can't give him, and McClane watches him get killed. Hans has a backup plan, and Theo starts work on the vault. Thinking on his bare feet, he sets off a fire alarm, but the terrorist thwart this plan and sends someone to take care of McClane. They fight, and after killing the terrorist, he sends him down in an elevator. Ho, ho, ho. McClane uses a walkie-talkie and gets the police to send a car. And after arriving and seeing nothing, Sergeant Powell is about to leave when a body comes crashing down on his car. This alerts the police to some crazy goings-on at Nakatomi. Only now, after offing some more terrorists, McClane has Hans's detonators. The police try to storm the building using an RV, but Hans has blown it up. McClane retaliates by blowing more stuff up. Sleazy Ellis tries to reason with McClane, resulting in him being killed. Hans searches for his detonators, but is caught by McClane and thinks he's fooled him into thinking he is a hostage. The whole situation goes south and more gunfights ensue. Dickhead agents Johnson & Johnson have taken control of the scene and cut the power to the building, therefore unlocking the final vault door. Hans finds out who McClane's wife is, takes a hostage as McClane deals with the rest of the terrorists and saves the other hostages as the roof blows up. In the final standoff between Hans and McLean, he shoots him and he then falls to his death, nearly taking Holly with him. Is it finished or is it? As they're leaving, huge Carl comes out with a machine gun and is blown away by Sergeant Powell. Whoop whoop! The credits roll to Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow.
Okay. You had a bit more breathing space there, didn't you?
I did, but because I knew it was a bit longer, I wanted to go into a bit more detail.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, so how long was the film again?
2 hours, 12 minutes.
So you had 2 minutes and 12 seconds. You did it in, drum roll, 1 minute 56.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It was edging up, wasn't it?
Edging up. I was, at one point, I thought, oh, maybe he won't. But he fucking did, so I have to drink. Okay.
Wow, yeah. Good drinking.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't actually know what I said.
Thanks, Booby.
Thanks, Bubba. Yeah. So.
Isn't that what he calls Hans?
And apparently Hans, that was Booby. Improvised.
Yeah, we've got so much to talk about.
I mean, I am just going to gush about this film. I think that I'm trying to be realistic and work my way through it with a clear mind rather than just like being a fan. But I find it really hard because I really love this film.
The thing is, we can always break it down a bit more next year when we go back to it because we have to do Die Hard every year and find a different angle.
That is good though, isn't it?
It is very good. I was gonna watch this the other night and then I watched Christmas Chronicles instead, which incidentally is very good.
It's a great film.
And so then that resulted in me watching Die Hard today again and again. And it is so good.
Yeah, I love it. We watched it last night. So we've done basically four Christmas foods.
Four Christmas foods.
Movies or Christmas films this week.
What have you done?
Tuesday we did Home Alone.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday we did Home Alone 2.
Right.
So we were going to do Die Hard on Thursday.
Yeah.
But we decided we wanted to save it for Saturday night, for last night.
Okay.
So actually on Thursday we did Die Hard 2.
That's cool though.
But bizarrely, I mean, I know I can't talk about them because they're 90s films. But in each of those three films, Home Alone, Home Alone 2 and Die Hard 2, there's a section where they get out a plan. And it's like, oh my God, there's three nights in a row. They got some plans out. Yeah, so we had a little giggle about that.
What have I done? So I've done Love Actually, clearly.
Nice, nice.
Home Alone.
Yeah.
And Christmas Chronicles. So my Christmas film so far.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, and Die Hard.
So, and of course. Well, that's the thing. Should we talk about that
let's
now?
Let's get that debate over and done with right now.
It is a Christmas film.
Yes.
Over and done
with. All right. Well... So the only controversial bits I found about it was when Bruce Willis was having his comedy roast.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said it wasn't. But 20th Century Fox actually said it was the greatest Christmas story ever told in the 30th anniversary trailer for the film's release. So there you go. Done.
Straight from the horse's mouth, as it were.
There we go.
Yeah.
Also, I know we'll get onto it later, but how come the music,
mm-hmm.
I mean, everything is so Christmassy and Christmas-inspired. How can you not believe this is a Christmas film?
Exactly. Okay, so it's not... A festive movie.
All right, yeah, Santa doesn't come and save the day.
Exactly. You know? But it's set at Christmas. It's full of Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
It's full of Christmas music, although not as much Christmas music as I seem to remember. I think I'd sort of convinced myself there was a lot more Christmassy tunes in it.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, I am counting Ode to Joy as a Christmas mm-hmm. tune as well, because that feels very, you know...
Yeah.
It does.
I mean, it isn't, but...
But it feels a bit festive, doesn't it?
Yeah, true. In this respect, yes, it does.
But when we get to the music section, you'll tell me all about the composer, I guess. But there was laced...
Oh, will I?
I'm sure you will. Yeah, we always do.
Okay.
But, you know, it was laced with a lot of Christmas music.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's so many little...
And it's set Christmas Eve.
There. And it's set on Christmas Eve. Yeah.
So, there we go.
There we go.
If you don't agree with us, then... Well, don't bother writing because we won't read it. No, I'm kidding. But if you don't agree, that's fine. But
yeah, do you think it's a Christmas film?
Yeah.
No. I mean, if you don't, then you're wrong.
Absolutely.
But it's always good to hear from you anyway, even if you are wrong. But so let's work through the film, I suppose. So, John McClane.
Yeah.
I like him because he's a flawed character. He's not your... He is your sort of every man. He's not your big sort of Arnie superhero, blah, 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 taking out the whole fucking bunch of them on his own.
Well, I think that's it, isn't it? It comes from an era of films where we're used to that now.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to these very muscular men taking out... Yeah, and men, I'd say men on purpose, actually, because it is very muscular men taking out gangs of... Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And we're used to that. And this is and he's known for moonlighting at this point.
Yeah, so. I think he was still working on moonlighting as well, wasn't he? Filming moonlighting at the same time as filming this. So, yeah, it must have been a pretty tough schedule, but... You know, for $5 million, I could probably handle it.
But yeah, you're right though. He was your everyday man. He wasn't overly muscular. He was just, and he spent a lot of time with policemen, apparently.
Right, research.
With research and getting the gallows humour, I guess, mm-hmm. of being a cop. You know, you got to kind of, which he littered throughout all this film anyway, with how humorous John McClane was.
Yeah. Like you said, the gallows humour thing, that's just reminded me of a story of a friend of, I won't mention any names because I don't want to get anyone into trouble, but a friend of ours became a policeman a few years after we worked with him, and he was telling me a story when he got his first posting, I suppose you'd call it, and he had to go out to a field. There was a report of a body in the field, and I apologise, this is quite a grim story, but this is what I was told, he had to go out to a field to find this body, and he found the body, so he whistled or whatever, radio for them to come over, his colleagues to come over and join him, and a woman point they picked the body up and shone a torch up its ass and the light came out the top of its head.
Oh my
and they do
God.
It every time apparently to new recruits. They did it as a joke. It was set up. It wasn't a real body.
I was going to say, Jesus Christ.
But he was like, what the fuck are you doing? We've got to... gotcha. I was like, fuck it. The gallows humour thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, he shit his pants. That's dreadful. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's what our taxes go towards. Crazy.
Cray cray.
You are so street. But so gallows humour. But it's not the quipping sort of humour that you get with Arnie.
No.
Yes, there are a lot of quips there, but it's just a lot more. He's more of a real character than the Arnie superhero type.
Yeah, he's
guy.
Bouncing back, you know, like I always preferred Roy Rogers, you know, things like that. And I mean, that line has become immortal, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Can I say about that line? I don't know if you've read the same thing on the TV edit. So
Melon Farmer.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, is Yippee-ki-yay, Melon Farmer.
Well, do you remember there was a play, wasn't there? About, I don't know, probably about 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And it was called Melon Farmer. And it was because, apparently, motherfucker, when they edit it in America or around the world to go out on TV, they replace motherfucker with Melon Farmer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yippee-ki-yay, Melon Farmer.
And there was a side-by-side comparison on YouTube as well, if you hunt it down, of the uncut and the Melon Farmer version. And Chief Guy in the airport. Oh, no, that's the second one. I forget that. See, oh, God, that's going to happen now. Instead of fucking, he kept saying freaking.
Okay.
Anyway, that's irrelevant. It's not 80s.
I mean, well, kind of before we break down the film a little bit more, mm-hmm. so this was meant to be something else.
Oh, yeah, based on the book. Yeah.
Yeah, so from what I've done a lot of back and forth today and stuff, and it was so there was a film called The Detective with Frank mm-hmm. Sinatra, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he wrote the sequel, apparently, the sequel book, after watching Towering Inferno, mm-hmm. and with the intention, I think, of bringing Frank Sinatra into play...
The same character.
Not John McClane, but it's something... Yeah,
I can't remember what the name of it, yeah.
So, I mean, this could have turned out so differently, as will be evidenced when we get to the casting, actually.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of that version... Mm. Sinatra was already in his 70s by that point. So he said, there's no way I can do it.
And it would have taken... Apparently the book takes place over 3 days instead of one night.
Yes. Yeah. But it works much better as it is.
I think...
For me personally.
I think what they've done with it... Now, I remember watching, there was a lot of stuff on it and it went through a lot of rewrites. And I think they've hit the tone perfectly.
Mm. And I think a lot of the cast were improvising anyway. It really works.
It does.
And what a cast. What a cast.
I can't wait to talk about those.
Yeah, so there we go then. So there's the Christmas party that goes wrong. What? The guy playing Takagi.
Mm.
That voice. When you've got like him on one side and Rickman on the other, you've got these two great voices. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We've got a lot to talk about with Rickman.
Yeah. So, yes, Christmas party goes a bit wrong when they arrive.
Mm.
20th Century Fox building.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And I like the fact that people go there now to try and take photos, and they've had to ban people from taking photographs outside the building.
What?
I know. It's a bit naff, isn't it?
I suppose you could do it from a distance. It's big enough.
Exactly. Yeah. It's still there. If anyone wants to, you know, pay for us to go and see it, do a podcast
really
from there.
I'd love to go and visit.
Especially
that building.
Especially at Christmas. Yeah.
That'd be great. it got its 80s boob shot in.
Of course. Several boob shots.
I think she was a playmate.
Yeah, well, she's a playmate. The girl on the poster is a playmate.
Yeah.
And the girl in the airport at the beginning with the great ass.
There we go.
She's a playmate.
There we go. We got
John McTiernan, I love you.
We've obviously done the same amount of research.
Nice. But again, you know, 80s pointless boobs. Not pointless, but needless. Fantastic.
I was also, in fact, well, I'll wait till we get there, Ellis later on. What a dick.
Fucking douche. Absolute fucking douche.
I did think of you when I was watching this, and we've had a lot of discussions recently about the 80s yuppie power and stuff like that, and he literally represents everything that you've been hating the last
and
few.
And it's surprising how many characters are like that in these films we're watching.
The complete opposite to Takagi. Mm. I mean, he's just, you warm to him really quickly, don't you?
Yeah, I really like him. Holly, he's done all right for himself, isn't he?
Yeah.
And although I don't like the going back to her maiden name thing. I mean, we've never seen anything that's happened before, but she's decided to leave her man in New York and go chase her career. By the looks of it,
yeah, I don't mind that. I mean, really?
What, going from New York to LA?
Well, you know, it's a career choice.
She's married. Mm-hmm. They should all go together or not at all.
Well, okay. Well, then why didn't he go with her?
Exactly.
Because I know he had a 6-month backlog of New York scumbags to put away.
Hurry up with your 6 months and fucking move across as well, you stubborn bastard. I think that's the problem. They're both really stubborn.
Yeah.
But they obviously love each other, so that's good.
Yeah, they do. I just know where it's going, though, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, don't think about it. Because they're still together in the second one. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine. Spoilers. Anyway, yes. So, he meets her at the party. Doesn't really like her friends. He is a bit of an asshole, really, isn't he?
Well, he's right to not like Ellis, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Ellis is
that's a dick.
Ellis is a cunt, but that won't make it.
If it does, it does. It's Christmas.
Yeah, he's a Christmas
cunt.
It's
time for the C word.
Yeah, so he's there. He cleans up. They have their little argument. And then the robbers arrive. Mm. I like the fact they rewrote the script to make them not terrorists. Literally just thieves.
And that works. That really works, though. Yeah. I mean, the whole going after all the large amount of bearer bonds.
Again, like Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, you gotta love the bearer bonds.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know what the fuck they are, but you gotta love them. And that's when we meet Hans Gruber. What a great character.
Yeah, he's an amazing character.
Yeah. And just so... he nails it straight away. He's terrifying, but he hardly does anything. And he doesn't have to. He's so powerful, he doesn't have to shout and bawl or anything like that.
No.
Superb. Such a good performance.
And I suppose this film's got echoes. I mean, I'm not getting too filmy about it, but it does remind me of things like, not just Towering Inferno, but like your old, like the Poseidon and things like that, where you're going around this limited space. Yeah. And...
well, that's funny enough. One of the notes I've got is it's very 70s disaster movie.
Yeah.
The way it's shot, the music at one point when they're looking up at Nakatomi Plaza at the building. Yeah, it's really sort of 70s. And the way they filmed it, the lenses they used, everything in the background is blurred and all the lights are really stretched. It's so 70s, it's unbelievable. I love it. It's really good.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
I got a bit of fanboy.
No, not at all.
Yeah, love it. Great. And looking at some of the stuff they used, they filmed on 35mm, which is normal, but they did all the miniatures and stuff on 65mm, so that it's really, really crystal clear and it works really well.
The miniature work and all the camera stuff on it, it's phenomenal. I mean, we're looking back with 2020 eyes. Yeah. We've not said that in a long time. I couldn't find fault with it.
There's a few bits. Fringing around the chrome.
There's a couple of matte paintings you can kind of like, okay. But apart from that, I mean
the forced perspective stuff of the elevator shaft is amazing. You can't see it at all.
No. Nope.
And the explosions on top of the building.
Well, they were real. They were practical effects.
Yeah. Amazing.
That's amazing.
You probably won't be allowed to do that now.
No, I think they got into a bit of trouble in LA when they were doing that. I think so.
Fuck it. They made 140 million, whatever it was.
We've had worse days.
We've had worse days, Rodgers. And then, of course, we meet Al.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely Al.
He's so endearing, isn't he?
He really is. He's probably my favourite character. I mean, we meet Argyle earlier. I forgot to mention Argyle.
Yeah, I like Argyle.
He's a bit pointless, though, isn't he? He doesn't really do anything.
I really like him. I just did think he was a little bit pushy when he was like, no, I don't want to talk about it. Oh, come on, man. Are you what, married, divorced? I'm like, the dude has literally just said, I don't want to talk about
mate,
it.
Mate, just fucking drive me. I get you're a taxi driver. That's fine. But shut the fuck up.
It also made me laugh, though, because when I was a kid, the only time I'd ever heard the name Argyle was to do with Plymouth football team. So, always remembered that every time there's Argyle on screen, I'm like, yeah, there we are.
Yeah, but like I say, he's a bit of a pointless character once he's dropped John to the building, and then he just sort of waits around. And it's a bit, he just doesn't notice much.
Well, he does foil somebody towards the end.
He gets one thing to do and then drops them home.
Yeah. Yeah. But if this is what Christmas is like, I can't wait for New Year.
Don't get it. Nice.
That's knocked out to complete the quote, isn't it?
Shit, I'll just have to change that. So, like I say, then we meet Al in his Twinkies.
Al in his Twinkies. I'm kicking myself because I was at a supermarché this week.
Yeah, wait.
And there was an American section and I thought, I looked at the Twinkies and today I went, oh, you dickhead, you could have bought Twinkies for tonight.
I don't think I've ever had Twinkies.
Well, there we go. It would have been the perfect moment.
Have you had Twinkies?
I think so.
Do you know what they are?
Really sweet and I think it's got some sort of frosty... Like,
is it like a little bread roll type thing?
Yeah, and in the middle, it's got, I think it's got like a cream.
Okay.
I think. I don't know.
Can you please write in and let us know what Twinkies are?
I'll tell you what, Darren, I'll get us Twinkies for next week.
Okay. Okay.
We'll try Twinkies.
I like Bailey's too.
Yes. We like vodka. No, we will try Twinkies live on next week's episode.
Yeah. Okay, nice. And if you want to, you know, if you work for Mr. Twinkie.
Mr. Twinkie?
Mr. Twinkie, the frosted thing. Send us a job lot of Twinkies and we'll review them on air too.
Yes, the Twinkie episode.
And Bailey's. So yeah, the party goes tits up and he gets in touch with Al, who's the only one who basically listens to him. And then the goons arrive. Oh,
but before that happened, can I just say, it's quite fun. I love that bit where he's on the radio and she's like, sorry, sir, this is a secure line. What do you think, lady? I'm trying to order a pizza. Fine, pizza. Okay, arrest me. Drive down here and get me. But...
Exactly, yeah. But she's in the second one as well, isn't she?
Is she?
She turns up as like the one of the air stewards on the plane.
Can I go off on a quick tangent? The second film was the first 15 age-rated film that I saw in the cinema.
Oh.
And I was 12.
You bastard.
I know, right?
You
but the fact is that I had seen Die Hard by the time I was probably 10 or 11 then.
Was this with the girl as well in the background?
No, it was with my cousin. So.
Let's not go there.
So my cousin took me to see it and I was like, but the thing is, I couldn't enjoy the first half of the film because I thought I was going to get found out.
And then arrested.
Yeah, I'm going to get arrested for going to watch Die Hard 2. Anyway, yeah, I mean, Al turns up, shit goes south.
Yeah, Takagi gets a bullet in the head.
Oh,
really harsh, yeah. Really harsh. But I really like that moment. It's a good scene. Mm.
It's a nice suit.
London, but very violent, very violent. So yeah, then Al arrives and he drops one of the baddies out the window on his car.
And I love that bit where he's just reversing and going ape shit. Now, damn it, now! And it's sort of reversing. And that's, yeah, then we do get, I suppose, the onslaught of the police coming in then.
Police and that fucking douchebag.
Okay, he's Ferris Bueller's as well. No, he's Breakfast Club. It's Breakfast Club.
I was talking more about the reporter. He's a fucking douche as well.
Oh, well,
Paul Gleason is the headmaster in Breakfast Club. He's Al's boss, basically.
And the reporter, well, he manages to fuck everything he goes towards. Yeah, so, like, he screws up in Die Hard. Also, do you remember where else he's from?
No, remind me.
He managed to shut down the bloody Ghostbusters as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I do.
He fucks everything up.
He's a dick. And he's also in the second one as well.
Yes, he is.
Thornburg, isn't it? Is that his name?
Yeah, William Thornburg.
William Atherton, yeah. Yeah, he's a douche. I don't like him either. Yeah, so then we get the explosive stuff.
Lots of it.
Yeah, oh, fucking great. Love
I mean, explosives. They try and raid the place. I love all that with the lights and the RV. Oh, God, they got an RV.
What does RV stand for? I always thought it was like remote vehicle. But there's a guy blatantly in the front driving it.
Yeah, I don't think it's not remote vehicle. Well, they have RVs for holidays and stuff.
Yeah, I know. So. Dale had one, didn't he, in Walking Dead? What the fuck's an RV?
Well, okay, if you want to tell us what the RV means in that context, then please, drop us a message. But Hans, I mean, that was the real knobby side of Hans, wasn't it? When you went, right, no, hit it again.
Yeah, and it's cool as a cucumber. So it just shows what an absolute fucker he is. He means business.
Mm. I like the way McLean got revenge, though. And he's like, yeah, you want to fucking do this? Okay, I'm going to shove. I mean, that elevator shaft scene, when he shoves that down, it all blows up. And you could see Holly falling in love with her husband all over again.
The only one that could annoy people that much.
Yeah. Yes.
But like saying that Paul Gleason turns up the chief and then the FBI idiots.
Johnson & Johnson.
Fucking, yeah. And they're just thoroughly useless.
Just doing everything by the book. But then they turn a bit weird later on in the film, don't they?
In the helicopter.
Oh, my God. Mm. He just suddenly, like, the whole Saigon thing. He's like, this reminds me of Saigon. I'm like,
So you're in it just for the killing then, basically?
That went dark very quickly.
Well, that's what he was saying, isn't it? McTiernan?
Yes.
The director was saying it was a much darker script when he first took it on, and he didn't want to do it, and he managed to lighten it up. But I guess some of the elements still... still there.
One thing I didn't think about until I was researching this today was Ellis, when he goes to do the negotiation.
Yeah.
And they bring him a Coke.
Yes.
Do you think it's good? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he does say, have you got any Coke, doesn't he?
Does he actually say that?
Yeah.
Right, there we are then. Yeah. And they bring him a Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
I remember him from Supergirl.
Oh, he was the love interest, wasn't he, in Supergirl? Wasn't he? Or
yeah, he was the love interest, yeah. Yeah. And he was a much different character. Well, yeah, he wasn't a dick.
Mm. He's an absolute fucking idiot in this. Don't like him. And he's obviously trying to pull Holly as well. Fucker. Yeah, moving on. But the lift shaft stuff, and you see, there's a really iconic moment, isn't it, of him in the air ducts with the lighter.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Such an iconic image. Love it.
And I think that was an accident as well.
Really?
Not the elevator shaft, but when the stuntman was doing the stunt, and, you know, he went to grab one air duct, and then he dropped. That was an actual fuck up.
Oh, really?
So he was meant to grab the top one.
Oh, shit.
Fell and grabbed the second one. Kept that cut in the film.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm guessing it wasn't that.
That far, but jeez.
But even still, you don't want to fall, do you?
No. Well, they did the same with Hans Gruber at the end, didn't they? He was supposed to be released at a certain point, but they released him early.
Yeah.
Which is why his face is like, fuck!
Yeah, they said, like, we'll do it on three, and they went one, dropped him. Yeah. And he absolutely looks petrified, yeah.
To be fair, I'd be petrified as well.
Regardless, falling 25 feet or something that he was meant to fall on, yeah.
Fucking hell. And then it all goes tits up in the film. There's a massive, massive shootout and stuff, and the explosions, and just exactly what you want in a gangster film. But yeah, just exactly what you want in one of these types of films.
And throughout the whole process, he gets fucked up, doesn't he? When they shoot the glass, and his feet are getting mashed, he's getting shot in the back. You know, he's a bloody mess by the end of it.
But that's what you want to see. That is exactly what you want to see.
But you also have a lovely relationship with him and Powell on the radios when they're having
a little heart-to-heart
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so well written and it's so well played. I really like it. But it's also so satisfying. The way it's got a beginning, a middle and an end. The bad guys don't win, the good guys do. And there's not much more you can say about it, really.
Well, I tell you what, let's not say anything more about it.
Okie dokie.
Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the phenomenal cast.
Yeah. This month's special Patreon episode is available now. This week we are going to be looking at some favourite songs.
The year we're looking at is 1981.
It's been very, very hard.
I just want you to edit it so you've just gone, it's very hard.
That's one of your top five songs of the whole fucking year.
And what a drum solo.
Yeah. And it's one of those songs that when I do, it's guaranteed to get people up on the floor dancing.
See, this is going to be a 30-40 minute advert for Darren Darren, the ultimate 80s tribute.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I mean, fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, did you say something?
Nothing.
No.
Yeah. It's a montage song.
You make my dreams come true. Pulled off the top spot by What's the Matter You? Hey, girl, I know. I mean, that's a fucking injustice.
I mean, the one I always put on the list, I'd said to Darren earlier, was Rabbit by Chaz and Dave. So there we are. Those are our top fives from 1981.
All 80s Adventure Patreon special episodes are available via subscription from the website patreon.com/80sadventure or check out 80sadventure.co.uk for further details. And we're back. Yes, we are. Part two tonight of our look at the great Christmas film, Die Hard.
Yeah.
It's official.
It's official. We've made it official.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Let's look at the cast.
Yeah. So I've got some really weird alternatives in this because it was in development for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, I mean, Clint Eastwood had the rights, didn't he?
Yes, to the book, yeah.
So apparently he planned to star in it when it was going to be that sort of sequel. But other people around that time that were looking at starring in Nothing Lasts Forever as opposed to Die Hard were Charles Bronson. And
really?
Yeah. Okay. Paul Newman.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds.
No.
I thought you were going to make a sexy sound about Burt Reynolds then.
No, I like Burt Reynolds, but Nah.
But okay, then when it became Die Hard, Bruce Willis took on the role after it had been turned down by De Niro.
Ooh, that would have been... Yeah, that would have been the dark version, I guess, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there were other big stars of the day that were considered. Obviously, people like Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson.
Okay.
Al Pacino and John Travolta. They were all considered, yeah.
And wasn't Don Johnson on the list as well?
Probably.
I'm not laughing at Don Johnson, honestly. I like Don Johnson, sorry.
An alternative for Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
Sam Neill.
Oh.
I really like him. He's such a good actor.
The problem is I can't actually see anyone other than
Rickman.
The Rickman playing Hans Gruber, yeah. A good actor, yeah, like you say. It can't be anyone other than Alan Rickman for me.
And for Holly, I've got a list of people. Linda Hamilton.
Okay.
Gina Davis. Mm. Yeah, I love Gina Davis. Yeah. Deborah Winger.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Mm.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Mm.
Carrie Fisher, and Kelly McGillis.
Mm.
So apparently they were all considered, but I think it was Bruce Willis. He saw, what was her name?
Bonnie Bedelia.
He saw her in a film and went, yeah, she's great.
Yeah, because she's quite an unknown actress to me. I only think I know her from Die Hard.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with a lot of her work.
No,
it's just I guess it's one of the things. I think she was, you know, she still is a very.
Is she? It's just a double check.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the fact is, so she's the same age as my mother.
Your mum?
My mum. But yeah, she's still working. But she's just a good, solid working actress, and she was great in this film.
Yeah, she is. She's absolutely fantastic. Yeah, there's not much more I can say about her, really. She plays the part really, really well. She's really likable.
Yeah.
She gives as good as she gets.
And she's not your typical 80s...
No, she's not a screaming airhead.
No.
And she's great.
Yeah, she stands up to Hans, you know.
She doesn't get a lot to do, to be fair, but...
I love that, though. Who put you in charge? You did when you killed my boss.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another fucking quote.
Is it really?
No.
Damn it.
She's still working. So, yeah, good on her.
I want to hang off on Bruce for a minute, I think.
Okay.
Let's go into let's go into Sleazy Ellis.
Yes. Hart Bochner?
I mean, that's a
Bochner
name, isn't it? Hart.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, surely that's like... Somebody else has got his name, so he's taken his parents' surnames and whacked them together or something.
He is absolutely brilliant in this.
He plays it
perfectly because he winds us both up.
Exactly. And what a sleazy little shitbag he is.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want... you're not wishing characters to die.
No,
but,
of course not.
But when he goes, you're like, yeah, well, you did kind of bring it on yourself, didn't you?
And I like the fact he doesn't, because you expect, oh God, he's going to really fuck it up now. Mm. He's going to say that, you know, Holly is John's wife.
Yeah, and that was the nice thing about him.
Yeah. Maybe he would have done if he hadn't taken a bullet to the skull straight away.
That's that bit when he says, what's it, something about, you know, I'm not method acting here. Put the gun away.
Hans Booby.
Yeah, Hans Booby. What the fuck?
Bobby, that is from something though, isn't it?
But yeah, he's great. He really, really does what he's meant to do. He annoys us. And growing up, I wouldn't have recognised him as the guy from Supergirl either.
Right. But you love that film, don't you?
I did. I mean, I think in hindsight, it's not going to hold up very well. If we ever end up doing it on this podcast, it's not going to be a 10-star
movie. Oh, we're going to at some point, aren't we?
We are.
Apparently, Hey Bubby was a series of comics. Oh, and it was Bubby was also apparently a term coined by Donald Trump on The Apprentice.
Okay, let's move on to...
Even more of a reason to hate the little... I didn't say that.
Some more supporting cast then. Reginald Vell Johnson.
Yeah, oh, I love him. Absolutely love him. Such a nice guy. The voice of reason, if you like, in a bunch of meathead cops.
Yeah.
I know they're just doing their job, but they're very shouty, very, we're going to do it my way or the highway, basically. And Al's just, he talks to people.
I've got a problem with him, though. Not with Al, with I guess with the producers, because... I would have loved to have seen this relationship with Al Powell and McClane explored in future films.
Yeah.
And he's basically just, from what I remember, you can tell me better, that he just cameos in the second, really.
Yeah, he's in the first bit when McClane takes the fingerprints off the dead body. he faxes the fingerprints through to Al, and he checks them out and faxes back. That's it.
Yeah, you see, I'd like to have seen a movie where him and Al were working together. Or something. Yeah, that would have been really nice.
I agree. But again, it's the same sort of relationship in terms of the film as John has with Holly. They're only together for like a couple of minutes at the end. I know that in the first one, they're together for a couple of minutes at the party, but then they don't meet each other again until the end. And again, Al doesn't meet John until the end as well.
I think that happened in real life as well. During the filming, they did not meet until the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know that Willis and Rickman didn't meet until that scene where Rickman pretends to be American. Or they didn't rehearse it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think so it wasn't rehearsed. Yes.
Straightforward. I think it was his like first day on set, wasn't it? Rickman's first day.
Yeah. Takagi.
Yeah. What a voice. As I said in the last part, it's got a really rich, velvety voice, and he's really likable.
Yeah.
Like, rather than just being like your arrogant asshole boss. He's a really nice character.
I mean, and also, he worked a lot. Mm. I mean, he passed away in 2014, but I mean, he was born in 1929.
Oh, bloody hell.
So, yeah, he had quite the career. I think he's one of those people that he might pop on something that you're watching, you know, and go, oh, yeah. Mm.
And working since the late 50s as an actor, wasn't he? And like I said, the fact that he's so likable in this film, when he is taken out, it's a real shock.
Mm.
A real shock and a real shame. And it's a nasty moment. But then it just shows what a fucker Hans Gruber is.
I mean, okay. You want a quick chat about Atherton as Thornburg?
Yeah, another douche.
He plays those characters really well, though, doesn't mm-hmm. he? He's. I think in the 80s, he was synonymous with those sort of characters.
Right, yeah, just an absolute wanker. But I guess it sums up, you know, as we ultimately saw in the 90s with people like Diana and... Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get a story at any cost, yeah. And that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, especially saying to the maid, you know, if... unless you let us in and talk to the kids.
Yeah.
I'm going to get immigration down here.
Yes.
What an absolute bastard.
And also, this is the last time they're going to see their parents. And they're like, why the fuck should I let you talk to the kids?
Evil little shit.
okay, Argyle.
Wasted.
And this is the only film he was in, isn't it? No, not
is it
like,
really?
Not
Argyle the character.
Yeah, Argyle the character.
Yes, yeah. The only guy, yeah.
Devereaux White.
Yes, yeah. He's really likable.
Yeah.
He hits the ground running as a character. He's great. But like, well, he's a bit nosy, but...
He is very nosy.
But yeah, just doesn't really get much to do. That's the problem.
I suppose before we get to the main man himself, mm-hmm. I mean, we've got Johnson & Johnson.
Johnson & Johnson. I recognise Senior Johnson.
Yes, he's been in a film.
He's been in a film, yeah.
In a film that we have done.
Has he?
Yes.
Surprise me. Go on.
I can't remember.
Because he's got one of those... Oh, he's in the Goonies. Of course he is.
That's it.
Dingbat.
I was going to say, I know he's done a film that we've done.
Yeah. But he goes all crazy, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's very controlled. Johnson & Johnson is very controlled. Then he gets in the thing, starts going on about... gets in the helicopter, starts going on about Vietnam and getting a gun out. He's got his cap on backwards. He's ready
And he's willing to lose 25% or whatever it is.
25%. Yeah, that's one of my questions gone. But yeah, I'm he's sorry. Willing to... Yeah, 25%.
Yeah, what an absolute, just weird. I think it was Roger Ebert, the reviewer, saying that he didn't like the way the police were portrayed in this movie.
Because of
people like that and Paul Gleason's character as well. And I sort of get that, because they do come across as incompetent, bully boy, shoot 'em up idiots.
Yeah, he could have been a bartender. Well, no, from what he's saying, I genuinely think he's a cop.
Yeah. Listen to the guy rather than trying to do it your own way. He's inside giving us the info. But yeah, so they're dickheads. I mean, they play the part very, very well, Johnson & Johnson, but as characters... Just,
every time you say that, I think of baby shampoo.
Earbuds.
I do. I think of like kids' hygiene products.
No tears.
No tears. Johnson & Johnson, no tears.
Yeah. Nice. That'll be a crate of Johnson & Johnson stuff arriving in the post.
The terrorists, let's lump them together. Cause...
I just want to say Little Johnson is played by a guy called Grand Bush. Leave it at that. Yeah, so the terrorist robbers, muggers, bastards, whatever you want to call them, baddies.
Yeah, I mean, they get built on enough. They get built on enough to kind of go, okay, that's his brother, and there's this guy, and they're individual enough for them to be, I suppose, fodder for McClane.
I guess the good thing is they're not just hired goons, but a few of them do get a bit of a character. Their accent, or not their accent, but sometimes they speak to each other in German. and sometimes they speak to each other in English, which is quite bizarre. They should have just done one or the other. But it's a little thing. But, you know, they're great. They're all fucking massive guys as well. They're really tall.
Well, not Al Long, if that's how you pronounce it, but he's been in...
Never heard of him.
But he's the one that I kept on saying crops up in so many 80s films.
Well, yeah, he was in our...
Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted's, yeah.
He Genghis. Was, yeah, Genghis Khan. But he's all over the shop, especially 80s martial arts movies, things mm-hmm. like that. He is all over the place.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon, Big Trouble, Little China.
Yeah, and he gets to eat chocolates.
He does. What does he get to eat?
I'm not going to say, because it might be one of my questions.
Oh, really?
It might be one of yours.
Maybe. Yeah, so terrorists as a whole, they're fine. They're fine. Yeah. They get their own little bit. I suppose Carl is the second
Alexander
in command.
Godunov, yeah. Who was Russian? But he did a lot as well, didn't he?
Also reminded me a lot of Matthias Hughes.
I don't know who that is.
So he was big in the late 80s, early 90s. Have you ever seen a film with Dolph Lundgren called... it's called Dark Angel here, but it's called I Come in Peace, I think, in America.
I've heard of Dark Angel, I think.
It's about an alien that comes down basically and kills people and injects them with cocaine or... No, heroin. Injects them with heroin, takes out their blood, and this is an alien drug, which is a mixture of our blood and heroin. Okay. Anyway, a bit of a tangent.
Right. Okay. Going back to Alexander Godunov, he was in things like The Money Pit and Witness, obviously Die Hard and Waxwork 2, and passed away really, really early. He was 45 when he passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, from Russia, as I said. Died of natural causes at the age of 45. That's sad. Very sad.
Yeah, it is really sad. What great hair he had.
Yes, beautiful, lustrous locks. Why is that beautiful, lustrous locks?
But, yeah, he was... He was really intimidating, and the fact that he comes back as well, you're like, come on.
Again, like we were saying about whatever film it was, you expected to finish at that point, or the action.
Yeah, War Games, wasn't it? You expected it last week.
And then that final little moment, yeah, it's great.
So there's one thing to be scared of, is a terrorist, I keep saying terrorist because it's how it's referred to, not only a terrorist that's taken over a building, but you've already killed his brother.
Yeah. Yeah, be afraid, be very afraid.
And I do want that jumper, though, that Christmas jumper that says, now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. Just genius. Which brings us to the man.
Yeah.
For me, the main man. I mean, I love Willis, but Rickman. My God, what an actor.
Mm-hmm. From what I've read, apparently he didn't want to do this.
It was his first movie, wasn't it? Yes. He'd been a theatre actor before, basically.
Yeah, he'd been a theatre actor, and also I think he'd been in LA a couple of days, and he was like, oh, I don't really want to be in an action film playing.
Two days, and you get cast in one of the biggest films of 1988.
Well, but...
Poor bastard.
Would it have been as big without Rickman, though?
I don't know.
You put a generic baddie in there, it's not going to work. You need someone that's, you know...
A good, well, yeah, like you say, someone who's not just going to go wide-eyed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's so restrained, so it's fantastic. It's just, that is an acting masterclass. And the fact it's his first time in a movie, amazing.
I think in hindsight, if they'd have known what gold they had there, Gruber would have got away.
Yeah,
it's a shame. I mean, I know they tried to do that with Die Hard 3, didn't they? Bringing Gruber's brother into it.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah, ruiners, as you like to call them.
But what an actor, you know. Geez, Love Actually, Harry Potter films, Sweeney Todd.
Robin Hood.
Of course, Robin Hood. I love him. It's just something
because
about
I'll
him.
Hurt more. Yeah, he's
well,
just...
quite.
But that's the thing. So, I mean, Rickman's got all these lines in all these films that are quotable because of...
Yeah.
I mean, what a rich voice he had.
Yeah, a strange voice.
Mm.
But, he's just so good. Everything about it is so watchable. When it's on the screen... He lights it up. Simple as that. 69 years old when we lost him 4 years ago.
Yeah, let's have a drink to Rick.
Yeah, that's a real shame. Mm. A real shame.
Indeed.
But then I guess we get around to Mr. Willis.
Yeah.
He's all right, isn't he?
He's fine. He's fine.
Again, another first movie as such.
Yeah, I mean, he'd been working, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But
TV actor mainly.
I think this gave him real credibility.
Yeah.
And I think from what I've read, he seems to love the character of John
McClane. He says it's his favourite character to play, isn't it? So, which is great. I suppose that's why he goes back and plays him time after time.
Yeah, that and the paycheck can't hurt. But
yeah, exactly.
My problem with Willis playing him over and over again is I wish they'd wigged him up a little bit for like... I know it sounds really weird, but in Die Hard 1, 2, 3, he's got, you know, like, receding hairline, fine. 4, when he's completely bald, I'm like, that doesn't look like John McClane.
Mm. When was four? I think it was quite a way after the...
It was.
Yeah, so...
Four and five.
He's, what, 65 now? Something like that?
Yeah, it's going to be.
Scary, isn't it? But he's great. His delivery of lines can be so... laconic, I suppose, is the word. It's good because he's not predictable. He's, like we said, in terms of the character, he's not... He's not another... wisecracking Schwarzenegger, and he's flawed. He's a real flawed character, and you see that.
Yeah, and he just gets fucked up.
Really
but
fucked
up.
But
he is an action hero. I mean, yeah. I love that iconic scene where he jumps off the rooftop.
Yeah.
And he's just like, imagine that panic. You're trying to get through the window, and it's like, oh, shit, hang on. Right, what are we going to do? Swing. Okay, swing. I'm through the window. Shit, now I'm being dragged out of the window.
And yeah.
It's that moment as well when he's just facing Gruber at the end, and they all start laughing. He's like, come on. Pulls the gun. Bang, bang.
Yeah. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
He was perfect. He was absolutely perfect in this film.
I can't see anyone else playing him. It would have been a completely different film.
Yeah.
Still would have watched it. Still would have loved it, probably, but completely different.
I don't know if it had so much rewatchability with somebody else. That's my thing.
I agree.
I think that's pretty much it, isn't it, with the cast?
Yeah, let us know what you think. Do you like the cast in this film? Would you like to have seen some of the alternatives Matt mentioned?
I mean, I think just out of curiosity, I'd love to have seen it with Schwarzenegger. It's just like a glimpse into an alternate universe, but then go back to Bruce Willis.
Yeah. It would have been very much like Commando and all that sort of thing, though, wouldn't it? And it would have been just another shoot 'em up. That's my issue with it. But like I say, it would have been a different film, and we'd have loved it anyway, so... But I like it the way it is.
Well, keep it the way it is then.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we won't change it.
We will not change
it. God damn it.
So coming up then, after our little breaky poos,
yes.
We've got a bit of music to talk about. I mean, great amount of music, but also I'm throwing down the gauntlet, my friend.
Oh.
So I'm sick and tired of losing on the quiz.
Okay.
So I've been prepping.
Good.
I've been prepping. I'm not optimistic. I feel like I'm an underdog, ready to come out fighting.
I think you'll probably be all right this week.
I hope so. I hope that I'll be crawling around your metaphoric Nakatomi Tower and make it out alive.
Nice. On that note, let's have a fucking break.
What's going on? Are you all right, Daz?
I'm so cold.
Why are you so cold?
I've lost my favourite Def Leppard t-shirt. Oh, if only I knew somewhere else to buy another t-shirt.
Do you know what, Darren? It's funny you should say that because we now have 80s Adventure t-shirts.
What?
Yeah. All you got to do is head over to 80sadventure.com, click shop and see what we have on offer. It's a way of supporting the show and there's also some fun designs with a lovely 80s feel.
80s Adventure t-shirts. Oh, I'm going to go to the shop right now. Bye.
Darren, it's an online shop.
And we're back. Yes, we are. Part three tonight of our look at Die Hard, that great Christmas film. And let's talk about the soundtrack, I suppose.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack.
Lovely, lovely Christmas music.
Yeah, yeah. As always, I don't think there's a soundtrack we haven't liked yet.
No.
No, I don't think there is. Anyway, this one, what was there, the original stuff, on the whole, was composed by Michael Kamen, who was responsible for scores for the Dead Zone, Brazil, Someone to Watch Over Me, Baron Munchausen, Three Musketeers.
See, Baron Munchausen, Three Musketeers was it? Was it the
couldn't he tell you?
Was it the Salkins one, or
it was 1993?
Oh, so he did the one with Kiefer Sutherland, Charlie Sheen. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. I love that film.
Yes, he did that. He was responsible for Highlander. X-Men, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, License to Kill.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
Weapon.
He's done an awful lot.
So he knows what he's talking about, really, doesn't he? And it's a good score.
Because he does take Christmas music and integrate it in, and also, you know, there was a whole discussion about him using Ode to Joy as well, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah,
and he was like, "I don't mind butchering other people's works, but really, Ode to Joy?"
Yeah, I'll butcher Vivaldi and someone else, but I'm not going to touch Beethoven.
Yes,
but it works so well. But it's not just Ode to Joy. Ode to Joy is from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, and it's there all the way through when you see the baddies. But there's lots of other bits as well. He uses a little bit of Winter Wonderland as well when they first arrive in the building, and also when they're at the party, the band are playing Brandenburg Concerto. I was was going to put that in the quiz, but I thought that's a bit harsh.
I found out what it was anyway, mate. Yeah. Okay. I've been doing my homework this week.
What was the movement called then?
I didn't know that. No, okay.
Or maybe I'll keep that in for the quiz. No, it's the Allegro Moderato from Bach's Brandenburg Concerto number 3.
Lovely bit of music, though, as well.
And again, a very familiar piece. It's been used in lots of things. So that's there. But he's not the only composer's music that's used in the film. Did you know that?
Which other composer is used in the film?
Tosspot. There's John Scott. You heard of John Scott?
No.
Well, when Al and John finally meet,
yeah,
they use a track from John Scott's Man on Fire. John Scott composed the score for Man on Fire.
Why is that then?
No idea. I think it was used as a holding track or whatever, as like a sample track before the film was scored, and they liked it, so they kept it. And also, right afterwards, when Carl returns, that piece of music is actually from Aliens.
It's not?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, so basically there's three composers, if you like, on the film, but Michael Kamen was the proper composer. But there's lots of other tunes in there as well. Like I said, there's Winter Wonderland and Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC. And what I really liked as well is when McLean's looking out the window and first sees Al arrive in the car and driving really slowly. And he says, "Yeah, who's driving this car, Stevie Wonder?" It then cuts to Argyle in the limo listening to Stevie Wonder. Skeletons by Stevie, yeah. And I like that. But it's great music.
And Let It Snow at the end.
And Let It Snow by Vaughan Monroe, I think.
Yeah, because it's not a version I'm familiar with.
No, and I'd heard it the other day, and I can't remember if they use it in Die Hard. I forgot to look. Maybe they use it at the end of Die Hard 2 as well, but maybe it just popped up.
Because I was expecting our traditional...
Yeah.
Is it Andy Williams?
Well, there's Andy Williams, there's Bing Crosby, there's Harry, obviously, Harry Potter Jr. Lots of different versions.
So
Dean Martin.
Okay, so but that's not... Because when I heard it today, I was like, oh, that's not...
Yeah, it's a good version.
It's a very nice version. So, lots of really good tunes.
Great music. And as I say, using the Ode to Joy in so many different ways, so many variations on the same piece of music. Very clever.
It's awesome. Mm. Oh, I'd like them. Imagine that on vinyl.
Well, then they didn't actually release it on vinyl.
Did they not?
No, I looked into it. I don't think the soundtrack was released at all until like 2003 or something like that on a limited CD, which sold out pretty much straight away. And then it was re-released, I think, about 10, 15 years later, but never on vinyl.
I guess it's a bit like the Kickboxer soundtrack was released on a limited CD and that sold out as well.
You got one?
I did have Kickboxer on CD, yeah.
Of course you did.
So, well, it's Van Damme dancing, isn't it?
Anyway, move on.
Stop it. Today.
Stop it. Vile. Yeah, so I mean that's the music's great. It's perfect for the film. And again, it's Christmassy. So it just backs up the whole Christmas movie thing again.
Yep.
But Michael Kamen, yeah, check him out. He's done so much. Passed away, I think, in 2003, something like that.
With that sort of back catalogue, though, he'd be more on a pedestal with people like John Williams and Danny Elfman and James Horner. You know, you'd imagine him to be more like... Because I've heard the name, but he's not as prevalent as the others that I've just mentioned,
It's a shame. It's a shame, because he's done a great job here.
How's the booze going down, by the way?
Very good, you?
Yeah, very good.
I'm quite burpy tonight, though.
I'm enjoying it. I'm worried about quiz though. I think we're going to get.
Yeah, I think you're going to win this week because I think you've gone all out to try and chaff me, as it were.
I wouldn't say I've got 2 pages worth of information.
Oh God. Okay.
Look.
Yeah.
You beat a man down for so long. He's going to try and fight back, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
John McClane in your Nakatomi.
I don't think I beat you down. I just don't think you did it enough research. Let's find out how we go, shall we?
Yeah.
Eyes down for a full house. Okay, so being episode 23, it's an odd episode.
Yeah.
So and you get to being go first.
Odd, I get to go first.
I wouldn't say something so rude.
Oh, all right. So out of my 12 questions that I've got written down here.
For fuck's sake.
I don't know, the thing is, I don't want it to be, I've got to give you a chance of getting it right, because that's fair, right?
Yeah.
Okay, my first question to you, Darren, is, who was the chief executive officer?
Chief executive officer?
Yeah, at the beginning, Takagi gives a message from the chief executive officer.
Mr. Nakatomi.
Mr. Ozo.
Oh, okay, fair enough. One to Matthew. Okay. When John McClane enters the Nakatomi building and gets past security,
yeah,
what is he whistling when he walks towards the lift?
I know this because I wrote it down for you, but I've forgotten it because the alcohol's kicked in.
Excellent.
I think it's Jingle Bells.
Is that your answer?
Yes.
No, sorry, it's not. No, it is Jingle Bells.
I genuinely thought, I wrote this down earlier, but I was like, oh no.
Damn it. Okie dokie. Oh, it's 2-0 so far. Yeah, I thought it was going to go this way this week.
I had to fight. I had to watch it twice today. Okay, this should be a relatively easy one to fight back on then. How many years has John been a cop?
11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit, shouldn't have gone with that.
Okay.
I've got so many questions, by the way.
Well, stop looking at them. You might see one of mine. Right, okay. Next question then. They're going to steal some Barabonds.
Yeah.
How much?
640 million
worth. Okay, that's not the question.
Right.
What is the interest he's going to expect to earn on that?
20%.
Bastard. Okay, yeah. It's going to be pretty much a whitewash this week, isn't it? Yeah, go on then.
I don't know. I'd really try to learn this film. Is this question 3 for me?
Yes. Yes, it is, yeah.
Well, okay.
If you take this, you've won.
As it's question 3,
yeah,
and as it's Christmas,
mm-hmm,
I've got to complete the quote for you.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh.
This might be one you've done for me, though. So
Maybe.
This is Theo.
Right.
All right, listen up, guys. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring except...
Fuck. No, I don't know.
Except for the four arseholes coming in the rear in standard 2x2 cover formation.
God damn it. Okay, that's 4 to you. You've won this week.
Woohoo! Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
It's okay. A Christmas miracle.
might complete the quote then. I've got 100 people down here and they're covered with glass.
Glass? Who gives a shit about glass? Is that right?
That's 2 parts of the 3.
Oh, glass. Who gives a shit about glass? I can't remember the third bit.
Who the fuck is this?
Okay.
Okay.
Close, though.
Close. Very close. That's 4-2, so you win.
Woohoo!
So, and 2-1. Bum, 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 bum. Nice.
There we go. Wow.
Wowzers. Okay. Nice. So in the grand scheme of this run of 10, it's 2-1.
It is 2-1.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess that's last orders at the bar then.
Oh.
Huh?
No, I like last orders at the bar because it means we've kind of got through the quiz and things like that and we've talked about the film, but I have such a lovely time talking about these films with you.
It's just the first Christmas film. We've got another 3 to go.
We have so Woo-hoo! Many great films coming up. All right. Yeah, last
orders. Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
So there we go. That was our little look at Die Hard. What do you think of Die Hard? Do you like it? Do you think that it's a Christmas film?
Well, they're wrong if they don't.
I think they've probably got that idea already.
Really?
That's what we think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we think then, buddy? I mean, well, it's getting time to score it now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, do you want to go first or should I go first? I don't mind.
I'll go first, and okay. I'm gonna be unashamed with this. I love watching this every year, and I was watching it today trying to be a bit critical about it and going, well, is it flawed? Is it this? Is it? And I don't think it is. I think there's not a lot that hasn't aged well. The performances are great. The music's great. The action's great. It doesn't feel like it's 2 hours, 12 minutes long. It flies by. It's a beautiful film. The cinematography, everything. I'm going to give it a nice Christmas 10 out of 10.
Wowzers. Okay. Well, nailing your colours to the mask there.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I pretty much agree with that. You know, it's a great film. Like you say, the performances are fantastic. It's infinitely rewatchable. Yes, I disagree about the running time. I think it is too long.
Do you?
There's definitely some padding in the middle. There seems to be a lot of running up and down corridors. some of the effects haven't stood up as well as... I mean, they're not bad. They're not shonky by any means, but there's still a bit of fringing around Alan Rickman when he falls and a few other things. And people like Argyle are wasted as characters, but I still love it. So I'm going to go...
Drum roll, please.
9.5.
Ooh! Yeah. I mean, ooh.
Yeah, so 9.5 for me, just purely for a few aesthetic things.
Okay. Well, that's it. I mean, so if you agree with us or disagree, let us know. Because is it us being too rose-tinted? Are we being too generous? Are we too full of the Christmas spirit right now?
There's no such thing as being too full of Christmas spirit. We need it this year, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, like physical spirits, like, you know, vodka. Yeah. And
well, the physical hooch.
The physical hooch. And later, I'm sure we'll be having Baileys in ramekins.
So. We are classy bitches.
But that's it. I suppose all there is to reveal what the tagline for next week's film.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a clue what's happening next
week. No, of course
I'm guessing
you
it's another Christmas film.
Well, I'm going to give you two taglines then.
No?
Yeah.
Greedy.
Well, you know. One of these, one is very short, and it says, "You'll crack up," as in Y-U-L-E.
Something to do with eggs.
Yeah.
Eggnog.
Roasting on an open fire.
Nice, yeah.
Or there's no place like home for a holiday. To be honest, I wouldn't get that from either of those taglines.
You can't stay at home when you go on holiday.
But what I'm saying, it's got somebody on a roof.
What's it got to do with holiday?
Oh, here you go.
You go on holiday when you go on holiday.
But the Christmas holidays.
That's his thing. It's Christmas.
Christmas break?
Christmas.
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 You're just Christmas.
Or you might have a Christmas vacation.
What?
Nice. See?
All right, okay.
All right, then.
I mean, that can't be it, surely.
Never heard
but
of it.
But listen, tune in on Wednesday to our Facebook page to find out exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So, anything else, Daz?
No, I don't think so. Just, stay strong. It's crazy times at the moment.
Crazy times. We will do our best to bring some really good episodes to you over the next few weeks. We've got some corkers in mind, so we hope you enjoy them as much as we're going to enjoy getting
drunk. And there is light at the end of the tunnel, so fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Let's all stay safe.
Stay.
Can't speak, but, you know.
Well,
you know.
Until next week, then, I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheers-y.
What?
Yeah?
Yeah?
Oh, bye, Die Hard.